Up next, rocker Storm Large shares stories from her memoir, Crazy Enough, and explains how her love of music eventually saved her from a self-destructive lifestyle. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. We're also available as a podcast, and you can find me on Facebook and Twitter.
WNYC is supported by Sanford Smith's 20th Anniversary Outsider Art Fair, Self-Taught Art, Art Brut, Outsider Artists, and Daily Lectures with 35 exhibitors, Friday through Sunday at 7 West 34th Street, off 5th Avenue, opens daily at 11 a.m. More at sanfordsmith.com. Rainbow Light, food-based nutritional supplements featuring Counterattack, an herbal formulation with andrographis, elderberry, berberine, and zinc, designed to bolster immune defense. At Whole Foods, Vitamin Shop, and health food stores, rainbowlight.com. Tuxedo Park School, dedicated to the education and development of students into thoughtful, dynamic citizens and leaders in the world, for students in preschool through grade 9. More information at tuxedoparkschool.org.
Men have boxed in the Olympic Games since the ancient Greeks adopted the sport. Women, never. That will change this summer. Join Rosie Perez in the Green Space for a conversation about women in the ring with a 16-year-old fighting for a spot on the first U.S. Olympic women's boxing team.
Before boxing, my goal was to have 10 kids before I was 26. Now, my goal is to be a world champion.
It's the next New York Conversation, Friday, February 10th. Tickets at WNYC.org/thegreenspace.
Then my brain goes over and over it. Oh no, can't get away from the shadow landmines.
Crazy Enough is not only the name of Storm Large's one-woman show, it also is what she's called her new memoir. And that title seems quite appropriate because it describes a life that started with a childhood spent visiting her mother in mental institutions and psych wards. Ms. Large, who is best known as a singer-songwriter, also writes candidly about her experiences with drugs, sex, and eventually saving herself to rock and roll. The book is published by Free Press, and I'm very pleased that it has brought it to our show today. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm sure that people are constantly asking you if Storm Large is your real name.
Yes. Yes, it is my real name. My dad is Coach Henry Large, and it's not even a very interesting story, the Storm thing. It was a friend of my father's named Storm, so he liked it, and I got it.
And are you tired of being asked by now?
No, it's fine. It works as a performer to have a memorable name, but it does sound like a performance name.
Well, your brothers are named Henry and John.
I know, they got family names, and I was the last one, so they just threw a crazy one at me.
Although your name is also Susan, isn't it? But that was your mother's name. Did you decide to distance yourself from her?
Well, I did, but not through my name. Nobody called me Susan ever. I was the closest I ever was called Susan was little S, sort of the little mini me to my mom. But I was always Stormy or.
And Large applies as well. You have to be around 6 feet tall.
Yes, yes. Very big feet, big hands, big mouth. It all works.
What does crazy enough mean to you? How much is crazy? How much is enough when you talk about crazy?
It's funny. The name came from I was going to a therapist with a friend as sort of backup. And he had asked me to come along. And I was talking to the doctor with the therapist about my show coming up. And I had yet to name it. And I told her what was going on in my experiences. And she said, well, gosh, it sounds like you're digging up a lot of old hard stuff, and if you need someone to talk to, you know, here's my card. You know, like, kind of like, you might have some trouble here. And I left, and he said, well, what do you think? Do you think you want to go see her? I go, you know, I kind of like the crazy I am now. I've come to appreciate the crazy I am now. I guess I'm just crazy enough, you know, not so much that I'm not functioning and not so little that I'm not interesting.
Well, you're not certifiable, but in the memoir, you tell the story of one of your mother's many doctors telling you that you would go crazy. And how old were you at the time?
Nine or 10.
And he was saying because of genetics?
Hereditary, yeah. He said it was hereditary that I would end up like my mother.
Does a kid handle that kind of thing?
It was a grown-up saying out loud what I had already suspected, because my whole life everyone said, you're just like your mother, you're just like your mother. And that wasn't necessarily a bad thing because she was beautiful and enigmatic and lit up the room and was wonderful. She But she'd come home with a different diagnosis every couple of months, and they were very cavalier with these diagnoses and saying, oh, we know what it is, and she needs to take this drug, she needs this treatment, she needs shock therapy, she has schizophrenia, bipolar disorder. Well, it wasn't bipolar, it was manic depression back then. And multiple personality disorder, mental epilepsy, which still doesn't even exist.
A number of those are really dubious diagnoses.
Yes. And so I came to disbelieve many doctors. But 9 or 10 years old, being told that you would end up like that was dispiriting, to say the
least.
Well,
it's like living with a time bomb.
It,
you know,
it was.
When is that going to happen? Tomorrow?
In your 20s or whenever you have children, whichever comes first.
So when did you stop even thinking about that or get past it?
I it still creeps into my psyche every once in a while. You really never get past that because you hear... You hear stories about people losing it, like they have a child and the postpartum just kicks in something hormonally kicks in the mind and they lose their mind or they lose it for a period of time. And so I hear stories like that and check symptoms for myself, you know. It's affected my decision on having children and the way I live my life, and I'm very careful.
Is that what triggered your mother's illness?
My father thinks it has a lot to do with the fact that she had a total hysterectomy when I was 6 months old. And he said she'd heard voices and things were kind of going wrong in her mind before that. But when the hysterectomy was completed is when she started becoming more and more suicidal.
And when did you first realize that your mother was different from other mothers?
It took me a while because going to visit her in the hospital was a great thing because I got to go see her and she was the most amazing person in my life. And so it didn't really occur to me until, you know, 7, 8, that you know, other people's moms made dinner and went to bed every night in the house. And you could be with, my friends could be with their moms. And I had to go to sleep wondering when she was coming home.
Or when she was home, she would often just lock herself up in the bedroom, wouldn't she?
Yes, and the thing that's terrible is when she was healthy, she was really fantastic, a magnificent, sweet person, and very loving. And but the drugs combined with the frequent treatments and being away, she would come home and be on mostly Thorazine, which made her a zombie. And so she'd be in her room with the door closed. We had to tiptoe around the house and the windows shades drawn. Or she would be, I don't even know what kind of antipsychotic that made her muscularly move around in her body uncontrollably. And it was very upsetting.
How aware were other people of what you were going through? Did your teachers know?
My father taught at a prep school. We all lived on the campus, and it's a very insular community. Everyone knew, but being in New England, you don't talk about it. You don't talk about it. My father told me a story that he came home from a victorious football game, and he's got a bus full of happy kids, and they all want to go get sodas and pizza and celebrate this victory. He steps off the bus. The athletic director runs up to him and says, Henry, you need to come with me right away. Susie threw herself out of a car very quietly in hushed tones. None of the kids heard about it. None of the other teachers heard about it. I didn't hear about it till I was in my 30s. It just wasn't discussed. It was dealt with.
So that was, how many times did your mother try to commit suicide?
I'm not sure how many times. The big ones we heard about, trying to crash the car several times. There were often times bandages on her arms. She would cut herself, break glass. If she was in the hospital, she could get something to break.
And when did you start seeing music as I'm assuming a release for you, a way to get past this?
It was in the 90s. I was living in San Francisco, and I had a pretty stupid drug habit. And I could always sing, but nobody ever gave me any inclination that was worth anything. You can sing, that's great, but what are you going to do for a living?
Now, you say you had a stupid drug habit. Had you started self-medicating? Is that what happened?
I would imagine so, yes, because heroin has the sneaky trick in making you feel like everything is absolutely fine and you're untouchable and you're perfectly loved in the universe. And, of course, it's transient and short-lived, and I was relying on this other person to do drugs with me to give me this semblance of.
And you didn't have a mother who might have given you a certain amount of advice, some support?
No. No, I.
Were you on your own pretty much?
Yes, I was. By the time I was 11 years old, my oldest brother was 18, and my father kind of had washed his hands of the whole thing. He had been dealing with my mother forever. And as soon as John, my oldest brother, could drive, we were kind of in charge of visiting Mom and bringing her stuff. So I was on my own quite a bit.
My guest is Storm Large, who's written a memoir called Crazy Enough. It's published by the Free Press. When you appeared on the TV show Rockstar Supernova, you dedicated your performance of Pink Floyd's How I Wish You Were Here to your mother. Mm-hmm. What kind of influence did she have on your music? Did you think about her a lot when you were choosing material to sing?
No, it just popped into my head, really, right then, because I realized that I had really gotten to a place in my life where she had chased me, really. The phantom of her illness and becoming like her had literally chased me through my life, where I was so afraid of becoming crazy that I kind of went crazy, and that drove me into a creative life, into an artistic life. And I'm standing on stage in front of millions of television viewers singing, and I had gotten there because of the choices I had made, because of my fear. So in a real way, my mom did raise me in a way.
Well, you say you were destructive and aggressive in reaction to her.
Yes.
Did she know about what you were doing?
In terms of drugs or?
Yeah.
No, but mothers have an interesting radar for their babies. And I hadn't spoken to my mother in months and months and months. And literally within 3 days of me kicking heroin, she called out of the blue and just said, I just need to hear your voice and know you're all right. And there was no way for her to know what was going on.
Had you stopped seeing her because it was just too painful, or because you were so involved with the drugs that the rest of the world didn't really matter?
It was just painful. I went through, it started, you know, at 11, 12 years old, I started to suspect that her mental illness was just a cry for help, just a wanting of attention as a mewling baby. And so I started to ignore her, but then I'd need my mom. I'd want my mom. I'd want to connect, and I would try to connect, and she would just manipulate with her illnesses. And so I'd just say, get out of it. I don't want to talk to you anymore. And then I'd go away for months or years. And that was really the remainder of our relationship from 11 until when she passed away when I was 35 or 36.
And you hadn't been able to reconcile, at least in the years before she died?
Actually, I got to see her. She died in December of 05, and I'd seen her that August, and I had not seen her in 6 years when I finally reconnected with her. And it did seem like she had found the proper cocktail of drugs where she was normal, and we'd started a new relationship and started to reconnect. And then I sent her the first Christmas card in I don't know how many years, and she died the day before I arrived.
Your songs are often autobiographical. Mm-hmm. Wasn't that enough? You then did this one-woman show. You've written this memoir.
Yeah.
Are they all interrelated?
They are. They are. I've always been kind of a ribald performer, very sort of a...
We couldn't play one of your songs because the FCC would give us a lot of grief.
Well, I have a couple of songs that are safe, but I'm a bit of a punk rock Bette Midler from her bathhouse days, and but I started to write a little more sensitively when an artistic director in Portland insisted that I write a musical about my life, and I thought it was going to be sex, drugs, rock and roll, and fun. And he said, no, it should really actually be about your mother as well. And I thought that was a horrible idea, but then the horrible idea turned out to be very, very successful. And so it's taken me through this whole journey. And so in a way, I am reconciling my relationship with my mother through my art.
Your voice is your instrument. And when you take heroin, your voice is affected.
Yes.
Cocaine will affect it.
Absolutely.
Alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
So did it return when you stopped abusing yourself?
Absolutely. But starting, most rock musicians, singers especially, notice the abuse that occurs when you don't know how to use your newly found instrument. So I injured myself a lot of times, but luckily I've learned to take better care of it.
Do you play an instrument?
Very badly. I'm a horrible drummer, a horrible bass player, a horrible guitar player, but I love to try.
Composing, you have to work with an instrument, don't you?
I prefer collaboration with people who are better musicians than myself. It stretches me and it makes me a better musician.
How important to your career were your appearances on the show Rockstar Supernova in 2008? 2006.
2006.
Actually.
It was actually, you know, it was a tough decision because reality television kind of, you get snubbed as an artist. You're not really considered an artist if you do that sort of thing. But really, television sells art now. And if you want to make a living as an artist, someone has to care about you and care about what you're doing. And they have to hear about you in order to care about you. And I'd love to be altruistic and hipster and say, you know, I don't need you to like me, but I do in order to keep my business going. So it was a good business decision.
And you performed one of your own songs.
Yes, I did.
Which probably was good strategy.
Very, very good. It was a lucky stroke. They let me play an original on the show. They let a handful of us play originals. And the next day, it was number 5 on the Billboard charts of the hot singles or something. And I would have never, ever been able to chart. I've never had a record label. I've never had a management company. I've always been independent. And it was simply because of 3 minutes on CBS that I got to chart on Billboard.
That was Ladylike.
Yes.
And it went up to 5?
Yeah, in one day. And then it disappeared the next day. But still, bragging rights. I beat Justin Timberlake for one day.
Now, you reveal an awful lot of embarrassing stuff in this book.
Yes.
Is it easier to write than to talk about when you're doing your one-woman show?
No, I am a born and bred performer.
You studied acting, didn't you?
I did, but when I went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts here, and it was a great school because it taught me immediately that I was a horrible actor and a much better musician and improvisational performer. So sitting and writing words by myself and not in front of it, not pulling them out of my head for an audience instantaneously is very hard, lonely, lonely work, and I detested it.
Well, you shouldn't reveal you're a terrible actor because you're in an upcoming film, aren't you? Rid of Me?
Rid of Me. Yeah, Rid of Me has been released in select theaters, and I've been told I am not horrible, but I know my wheelhouse is performing and singing. I love acting, and I would love to become a better actor and more opportunities to do it, but I know I'm a much better singer than an actor.
You've done your one-woman show in Portland, then off-Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
Have you written different kinds of material since you've been performing it?
I have, not for performance. I've been writing songs, and I've been batting around ideas of writing fiction because I'm sick of talking about real gut-wrenching stuff, so I want to write something light.
There's another aspect to the story which we can't spend much time on, but your mother was adopted. So
yeah.
There's the whole issue of just how far back all of this goes.
Right. Well, it was an investigation that sort of landed in my lap. She wanted to find her birth family. And then when she died, I got the packet of information so I could research the hereditary aspect of mental illness and found quite a bit.
We came into the segment with you singing Call Me Crazy, and we're going to go out now with 8 Miles Wide. Crazy Enough is Storm Large's memoir. It is published by Free Press. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
All of my life, I've never fit, but I won't complain and I won't quit. I am enormous. Get used to it. Everyone tells me I'm too much. Maybe it's just you're not enough for me.